Good afternoon, everyone. So we're going to start the sutta class. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So today we do this reading this Majjhima Nikaya Sabhavasa Suttas, all the tens. So because one of the reasons I choose these suttas because the Buddha's talk about this, all the tens. Anyone knows what the Buddha's refer to all these tens? This asava. So there are three types of asava. So what are the three? There is a kama asava, and bhava asava, and avijja asava. This is the taints, this is the defilements that keep us in, this is the underlying tendency to keep us in the samsara. This is the taints. That's why the Buddhas, in these suttas, the Buddhas talk about the destruction of the all these taints. So this is the defilements that keep us in the samsara. So these taints actually is different. The context is different from the three defilements that we usually mention, that is greed, hatred, and delusion. Is that the context is different. That is more referred to the ethical, that is unwholesome deeds. That's these three defilements, that is a greed, hatred, and delusion. So that's why hatred is not one of the asava, but the craving, the greed is. The craving. So the Buddha's mentioned again and again, they said anger is, they said no, greed. Greed is a less blamable, but it's difficult to remove. Anger is blamable, but easier to remove. And delusion, ignorant, is very blamable, and it's very difficult to remove because of delusion, isn't the ignorant, we don't know, that's why we have this greed. So usually this hatred, anger actually is derived from greed, isn't it? When pleasant feelings we like, we, you know, then we want more. If we cannot get what we want, we get angry, we get upset. So in this Four Noble Truths, the source of suffering is a craving to be exist, isn't it? The three cravings, the craving sensory pleasure, that's a craving to be, craving not to be. That's the bhava asava. And the other one is a kama asava. Kama asava is our sensory pleasure. That is the pains. That is the underlying tendency. That is the one who keeps us in the samsara. So I will start reading this, and then if any questions you can ask. So, all the taints, thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savati in Jetta's Grove, Anathapindika's Park. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus, bhikkhus, venerable sir, they replied. The Blessed One said this, bhikkhus, I shall teach you a discourse on the restraint of all the taints. Listen and attain closely to what I shall say. Yes, venerable sir, the bhikkhus replied. The Blessed One said this. Okay, so that's right, you know, the destruction of the taints, we need to restrain first, isn't it? To weaken the taints before we be able to totally uproot, totally the destruction of that, you have to restrain first. It's just like we're cutting a big tree. We have to get off the branches, you know, bit by bit until, you know, to half, then only we uproot the whole thing. So that's like the whole path of practice, that's like the start from the restrain, how to restrain these pains or this underlying tendency, not to allow this underlying tendency to arise. So when it's already arise, how to not to allow it to go further. So if you are not careful, if you are heedless, we get caught, isn't it? When this pain, you know, we allow this pain arise, and those unarisen one arise, and those already arisen become stronger. So we strengthen those pains. Then these the pains that really keep us in the samsara, keep us in the whole this whole cycle of rebirth. So, Pikus, I said that the destruction of pains is for one who knows and see, not for one who does not know and see. Who knows and see what? So, this knows and see actually is referred to the wisdom aspect, that is that through our wisdom maybe, is not the physical eye seeing, that is the knowing and the seeing that is from the mind, that is the wisdom aspect. So, wise attention and unwise attention. When one attends unwisely, unarisen tense arise and arisen tense increase. So they said if we attend unwisely to those unwisely, unarisen tense arise and arisen tense increase. When one attends wisely, unarisen tense do not arise and arisen tense are abandoned. So like sometimes like if we don't attend, like we don't reflect, we don't give consideration, you know, that is like we are giving the condition for those pains to arise. So he further said, Pikus, there are pains that should be abandoned by seeing. There are pains that should be abandoned by restraining. There are pains that should be abandoned by using. There are pains that should be abandoned by enduring. There are pains that should be abandoned by avoiding. There are pains that should be abandoned by removing. There are pains that should be abandoned by developing. So now it started each by each one of them. What are the pains that it should abandon by seeing? So he said, what pains, Pikus, should be abandoned by seeing? Here, Pikus, an untaught ordinary person who has no regard for noble ones and is unskilled, undisciplined in the Dharma, who has no regard for true men and is unskilled and undisciplined in the Dharma, does not understand what things are fit for attention and what things are unfit for attention. Since that is so, he attends to those things unfit for attention and he does not attend to those things fit for attention. So what are the things unfit for attention that he attends to? There are things such that when he attends to them, the unarisen pains of sensual desire arise. Just like of seeing. We seeing a good things that we like, you know. For example, a man see a beautiful girl. Okay, that then the sensual desires arises in him. So by seeing that, so when that's arising in him, then the arisen pains of sensual desire increase because they got you know get caught. So that is the pains, you know, because you have this sensual pressure. When this sensual pressure arises in one person, so the pains, the arising pains of sensual pressure, the sensual desires increase, the unarisen pains of being arise in him and arising pains of being increased, the unarisen pains of ignorance increase in him and the arisen pains of ignorance increase. That means that when we have this sensual desires, you know, arises, or this sensual desires already arise and is increased. When this sensual desires increase, that is leading up to our what arises, that is being arises. How we identify, you know, that our experience with the sensory pleasure. Like for example, there is a contact, so that is feeling arises. Then where we get caught, then there is a greed. That is the sensual desire, the greed. Then there's craving arises, craving being. So we identify those experiences as being. We are the, like for example, when we experience pleasure, so we take it to be me and mine. That is, we identify with that of being. So, and because of that, and there are a recent pains of being increased in him, and a recent pains of being increased. So, and a recent pains of ignorance arise. That's right, this is how that our, this is how we develop a view of how we view things, because we identify this with the greed, you know, the sensual desires. Then we identify with that, then give rise to this being. We are this, we are that, and that we increase our ignorance. So these are things unfit for attention that he attends to. And what are the things fit for attention that he does not attend to? There are things such that when he attends to them, the unarisen pains of sensual desires does not arise in him, and the arisen pains of sensual desire is abandoned. The unarisen pains of being does not arise in him, the arisen pains of being is abandoned. So the unarisen pains of ignorance does not arise in him, and the arisen pains of ignorance is abandoned. These are the things fit for attention that he does not attend to. By attending to things unfit for attention, and by not attending to things fit for attention, both arisen pains arise in him and arisen pains increase. This is how he attains unwisely. So this is how it's been repeating. It's just like, so when we get caught in that, you know, we've been identified with that experience, that desires, that is the craving, that craving, the sense, the sensual desires, and then we get caught with that. Then we give rise to the craving to be, being, you know, we identify with that, you know. So me and mine. So then we started to attack. Then this is how we get caught, one thing leading to another, because when we are not careful, when we are heedless, so we get caught in that. Then it's further, we will give rise to, we will follow that thoughts, you know, go further. So from sensual desires, we identify those as me and mine. So then the craving to be exists, being. This is me, this is mine. For example, we love a beautiful girl. So okay, this my happiness is from this beautiful girl. I love her, and this often get caught on to that, you know. And from that is how we identify ourselves. Even with our children, we identify me and mine. So that this is how we go further. Then was I in the past? You see, then we started to, because this sense of self gives rise with it, this sense of self, isn't it? Then doubt arise. Then we started to question, isn't it? Who am I? You know, was I in the past? Was I not in the past? What was I in the past? And how was I in the past? And haven't been what? And what did I become in the past? Shall I be in the future? Shall I not be in the future? What shall I be in the future? How shall I be in the future? Having been one, what shall I become in the future? This is how we started to have doubt, to questions. So is it that is a rebirth in the future? That is me in the future, or that is me? How? When? How? What was I in the past, and what will I be in the future? And this is, we started, because it started from the trigger of that, when we seeing something, and this is how this pains leading one thing to another, because of the sensual desires. Then we started to have all these thinking about it, and we identify this as a self, as this experience, as me and mine, and this self arises. That is the bhava asava. The bhava asava is being like this taints of existence. We are exist. You know, we identify those as me and my be, I am exist. So then we started to give rise to this doubt, you know, about whether what was I, whether there is a past, whether there is any future, any rebirth, you know. So if there is rebirth, that is the future. So who will I become? And how is it? And whole lots of, we started to think, isn't it? I remember when I was young, and I always so scared when I think of that, you know. I don't know what will I be. And if I die, I don't know what, you know. And started all sorts of speculations, you know, and things. And then I find very scary. So each time I think that, okay, I'm too young to think about it. Maybe let me think about it when, let me worry about it when I get older. You know, we think that only old people will die. We never think that, you know, die will come anytime. So that's kind of, you know, like, you just, sometimes you don't know, isn't it, whether that is past, whether there's, you know, I don't know who I was in the past, and I don't know what I will become in the future. And this whole lot, they have lots of doubts. That's why, and then this is how we get caught, we go further. And this is how we develop. And this, we, when those already arisen pains, actually we strengthen those, become stronger. This underlying tendency becomes stronger. Craving to be existent becomes stronger because we react to that. We give attention to that. When we give attention to that, it goes further, isn't it? So just give you an example. When I was a trainee nuns, you know, when just, and sometimes like how I remember that, you know, you live in the monastery, then you are living in a community. I remember one day I was feel hurt because I feel like I've been accused of things that I didn't do, you know. So I went back to my kuti and I was really hurt and upset that, you know, how come that, you know, I'm not like that, you know. This is how we think who we are, we think who, you know. So because if someone said something that we are, you know, we haven't done something, and then how we identify ourselves isn't who we are. When someone says something that is contradict to who we think we are, we got upset. We feel hurt, you know, the identify that is the me and my, the self is there. So then that time I get caught a little bit because I have that reaction. Because I get caught. Because through hearing, through the senses, isn't it? Through the hearing, seeing, and hearing things that, you know, that's contradict to who I take myself to be. So then, after that, I was walking up and down, in the walking path. I started to investigate, like, you know, they said this is called wise attention, you know. So I reflect. To give consideration, investigate. Actually, this wise attention, that means to investigate, to give consideration, to look at it, to reflect, you know, on that, you know. So, and from that, I started to reflect and investigate. Then I asked myself, why can't people say something to me? Why can't people accuse of me? I said, who am I? You know, and then I, at that moment, I realized that I attached to the sense of self. Then I realized that the bigger the ego, the easier you get hurt, if you hurt, isn't it? Because me, you talk about me, I am, you know? And then that's why if I'm not careful, then I develop a lot of anger and hatred towards the person who accusing me, isn't it? And we think that the person is terrible, horrible, and then we think that our problem is from that person. And this is how we reinforce that, if you're not careful. That's why whenever we suffer, it's good that we go back by yourself and investigate to really, you know, give consideration and reflect on that. Because very easily we get caught, and then we think that our suffering is, we can't see that that is our own clinging, our own grasping of me and mine. We can't see that. And then we will blame all the people outside, isn't it? Who said that? Actually, what other people say is just sound come in and sound out. you know. But because we take that, you know, when that is we have these five senses, the kama asava, that is from our senses, you know, the five senses, that is these pains come from that. So when we hear things, when we have contacts, that feeling arises. That is this dependent origination. When we have the body, we have these five senses. When there is contact, feeling arises. Pleasant, unpleasant. Then that is where we get caught, isn't it? We get caught with that. And with that, we give rise to, you know, this craving, tanha. You know, craving to be, craving not to be, craving like sensory pleasure. We want more. This is nice. This is good. And we can't get what we want. We got upset. We got angry. That is come from tanha. Tanha come from that is craving. Then come to upadana. That is the grasping, clinging, isn't it? We hold on to that. That the attachment. This is how we attach. We started to identify ourselves with all the experience, all the like and dislike. You know, we started to identify by ourselves. That is the sense of self, the ego. And this is how the dependence origination. Then we start with all this mentally, with how we think about it, and we try to make sense of it, and we develop these views, how we view ourselves. And then actually we are strengthen our views of ourselves, isn't it? Because we get caught. This is how. Then our ego become bigger. Rather than being weakened. But if we see that, we don't follow that, we don't react to that, it's just like yesterday, the thoughts that I gave, you know, if you don't attend to that, you do not follow that, you do not react to that, then you will not go further. So that's like, this is how that is from the bhava, asava, the karma asava, that is the sensual desires, then leading to this bhava, asava, that is the being, the existing being exists, the taints, that is this is the, some translate these taints as influence or influx. For the Chinese Angamas, they translate as outflow. This is how we outflow. Our energy is going out there, thinking that this is being influenced by that. The influx because of the context, and this arises. And this is how our energy, isn't it? Actually, this use up lots of energy, isn't it? Can be very draining when our mind, you know, go on and on with this, and then got upset, got angry with this emotion. And that is how we leading that. Then this is our sense of self, our ego being become stronger. This is how we being get caught in this samsara and this dependent origination, you know, when we get this clinging and attachment to that. And then this is how the birth, you know, we existent. Then we have rebirth, we have another rebirth, and then we cannot escape from this old age, you know, sick illness, sickness and death. And then we go round and round and round in that samsara. So yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they say sometimes it's good that we try to avoid. Like, for example, sometimes if you know that you really can't deal with the situation, it's always good to walk away. That's why I can understand, like, sometimes that it's allowed people to have the space to deal with that. But that's why it's very important that we apply this, you know, moment-to-moment mindfulness in our daily life. Our practice is not only sitting on the cushion. So be consciously aware, and we learn how to stop, you know, how to prevent that from going further. You know. No, that time actually I be able on that spot. Actually, I be able to hold myself. Like I'm not like, you know, because of the practice, I do have some extent. You know, sometimes you can hold yourself that moment, but doesn't mean that you have let it go, isn't it? You know, in front of people, okay, you know, you just smile, but inside that is still, oh, you know, you couldn't let that go, you know, it's there, you know, because it's your sense of self, your sense of self-interest being threatened, isn't it? This is me, this is mine, you know, something, you know, someone said something that is like, you feel your sense of self being threatened, isn't it? Because how we identify who we are, this sense of self. So this is how normally when I feel that I have, because I have enough mindfulness and I have enough strength to hold myself, and I know that this is what that I need to deal with, then I go back there. I used to walk up and down, you know, I walk up and down my kuti, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. And then I just keep, you know, letting that out. And then, you know, this coming, keep coming, keep coming, you know, this thinking about it is coming and coming. And then I just, you know, just to observe, to see what's happening to the mind, and this happening, and suffering, isn't it? Then I can see the suffering, you know. So that is the suffering. But a lot of people don't see that suffering. If you see that that is the suffering, then she will do something about it. And you started to look for what causes this suffering. Why causes me suffering? Why I get upset if people say something, you know? It doesn't matter what other people say, it's the sound, you know? Why I bother so much and I carry that with me, you know? Then this is how you really investigate and reflect and asking yourself questions. I find that it's very useful for my own practice that I used to ask myself questions. I investigate, asking myself why and why not, you know. And it's just surprisingly, you know, deep down we do have the knowing, we do know, isn't it? But it's only thing that we couldn't let go because the attachment of the sense of self, the ego, we couldn't let that go. On one hand, we do deep down, we know. But you know, it's not true, you know. How come that person's like that? You know, you just couldn't let that go. And that's why we are here. Because the ego, the sense of self, that's why we are here, we're clinging on to that again and again, we keep, you know. That's why it's important that we don't, you know, that is unwise, we attend this unwisely, we give attention to that. When we attend to those things unwisely, it's grow and leading one thing to another. And then next time, Then we give the and next time in the same situation, it becomes stronger. The emotion becomes more and more intense. The intensity of, you know, this is how we strengthen that. So, but even though we do not react to that, we do not strengthen that. But next time it still comes out. But it still stop by itself if we keep doing, keep practicing, keep doing not to. We try to attend wisely to this whenever these things arises. You know, if you are not careful, of course the things arise. But sometimes, if you are mindful enough, this will not come up. You know, but sometimes, of course, our mindfulness is not that always. You know, so this comes up. Then, if we be able to deal with it, you know, to really have this wise attention, not to attend to it, you know, unwisely, because we know that this is unfit. If we are going follow along that, and we create more suffering for ourselves. So that is actually it's good to always, when we suffer, we always go back and investigate and look at where the suffering coming from. And this is how we are giving this wise attention. You know, we attend to it wisely, not to, because it's unfit for us to attend to it. Some of the things we shouldn't attend to that, you know, because of it's unfit. Because like, for example, like the craving comes, if we keep focusing on that, then the greed become, we strengthen that. So, but if we, it's just like we feed that, it's grow. If we starve it, it won't grow. But it doesn't mean that it will stop. Like, yes, I think Friday, I don't know, some of you were here, one of the questions were asked that, is it possible that we be able to really totally abandon the sense of self? You know, I said it's possible, but it takes time. It's not easy. You know, it's possible. They said, is it possible? I said, it's possible. It's just like, I like to give the simile of the wheel, like, you know, it's just like, the energy is keep spinning, you know. So when we attend to that, then we are reinforced that. So we spinning the wheel, and it keeps spinning faster, isn't it? When we react, it's just like we kicking the wheel, it's spinning faster. So when we don't react, it's still spinning, you know. Even we don't kick the wheel, it still continue to spin. But when we keep doing that, not to feed it, not to react to that, not to kicking the wheel, not to spin it, and eventually the wheel will be slower, 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 slower. Stop, isn't it? If you leave it alone, it stop. But the problem is we cannot leave it alone, isn't it? One thing or anything arises, we give meaning to it, we take important. You see, letting go means letting them be, but we try to manipulate, we try to push it away, we try to suppress it, you know, we try to deny, we try to pretend that it's not there. We do all sorts of things, isn't it? Whenever things that we like, we want more, we crave. Things that we don't like, we try to push it away. And that's, then we are constantly interfering, because actually this thing is non-self. It arises, it just passed away, it just, you know, come and go by itself. But the problem is, we are the one who create that. We are the one to reinforce that again and again. So, that is how our... Yes?
To survive, mm-hmm. to pay our bills and to do mm-hmm. things. And so you, well, me as an example, I will then look at, okay, I've got to have X amount of money coming mm-hmm. in each week mm-hmm. to pay the bills. Mm-hmm. So where is the line for the greed of money or the greed of wanting things? Because for me, I do need to pay my bills mm-hmm. and I have to survive. Clothes, cars, food, to keep everything running. Yeah. Where is the line for that?
That is where your wisdom come in. The Buddha said that the middle way. That is your own wisdom, that you know that's how much you need. So you only get what you need and not what you want. Sometimes the thing that we want might not be the things that we need. It's just we want it. I see some people buy lots of things and never even use it. I've seen someone, you know, have whole in the, when I was in Singapore, someone told me that her relatives whole wardrobes, and she gave her a new dress. Even the price tag is still there. They said, amazing. She said, she bought her, she said, oh, her whole wardrobes. She said, some of the dress, even the price tag is still there, haven't worn, brand new. Because sometimes we think that we just want it. But we don't really need it, isn't it? But that's why the Buddha's, you know, at the beginning, you remember the Buddha's when he before his enlightenment, because of the thing that the problem is come from this sensory pleasure, then he should, you know, like, he start himself, self-modification. So this is not, we need to have basic physical comfort in order to practice. You see, we have to have a relatively healthy body, isn't it? So that's why we just get what we need, how much we need. So, and then that's it. And then we try to live as simply as we can. You know, basically we do not need a lot to be happy, isn't it? But
then, like, for instance, with desires to travel and see different things.
Yeah, that's why this is why you... Yeah, that's where you have to restrain yourself. You know, asking yourself, is it, do I really need it? Is it that, you know, haven't I seen enough?
But isn't it fun and enjoyable?
So, and how long it lasts? And sometimes we do have to ask ourselves. Like, I remember that I think I shared this with many people, this story, that when I was, I remember this gentleman is a Hindu, you know, when I give the talks, I was invited to Burma. And I, before that, I was peaceful. I was so happy completely. I have no craving, no any desires to go anywhere. I was really quite happy and peaceful until someone invited me to go to Burma. And this is trigger of my desires. And I think about it the whole night. I was thinking, tomorrow, how am I going to talk to Ajahn Maya? How am I going to convince her to let me go? And the whole night, and I feel that so much suffering. Then after that, I asked myself, what the heck are you doing? And I said, so, and I realized that the thinking about it is so much suffering. How to get that, you know? That is the thinking about how to get this thing actually is very unpleasant. And I realized that it's very unpleasant in me. And I said, why I get into this, you know? Then I stopped. I said, okay, that's it. Tomorrow, what I need to do, I just can tell her that I was invited. If she said, okay, you can go, fine, I go. If she said, can't, fine, I don't go. Because I have enough suffering. Because thinking about it, thinking of how to get that, you know, that drive, you know, that kind of energy, actually is very unpleasant. If your mindfulness is strong enough, you feel that it's very unpleasant to try to get things. You feel that it's very unpleasant. Then I realize that actually, those kind of excitement, those craving, actually is a very afflictive, you know. Then I drop it. I drop it. I said, no. I find I'm not going to go. If she said, yes, I can go, okay, it's a bonus. If I can't go, I'm happy too. I don't have to go. So how much I need to see, isn't it? Like, I remember when I was in Singapore, and I, you know, busy the whole week, the last day, you know, and then I come back, you know, right from, I get down from the plane, you know, and already give a blessing to someone, and later talk to someone from 7 to 10 o'clock, and the next morning conduct, you know, give talks in the afternoon, and another talks in the evening, and then a 2 days meditation workshop, and whole series of talks. I was giving 10 topics of talks to Keith, you know, within a few days, every day at least 2 talks, you know, and with the ceremony and things like that, and talking to people. And the last day, I just, okay, I'm quite, okay, I can relax, you know, I go back. And I was staying with supporters. She's hosting me. She has 4 levels, so I was on the penthouse level. So she come and, like my cup here, she look after me. Then I was relaxing myself, sitting there, meditating. Suddenly she comes out, she said, oh, I was thinking that I haven't picked you to look around. Because I went back, you know, after finish about 5-ish, you know. She said, you want to go out to have a sightsee? I said, no, thank you. I said, you know, I said, I'm fine, I'm okay. Are you all right? Is she sure? Because she is just good. She thinks that it's kind, you know, want to take me to go around for sightseeing. I said, no, I do not need that. Because to me, like if you have experienced the more refined type of happiness, and this kind of happiness becomes like this kind of excitement to see things becomes much, much coarser than the other type of happiness. You don't crave for that anymore. That's why this is why you don't crave for that, because that is very gross compared to the happiness come from stillness, the happiness come from, you know, the deep meditation. And this is just like, you know, just like people eat all, having all these refined foods, you know, and then you taste the coarser food, you say, oh, this is more coarser. The same thing. So I said, I don't want to go. I said, I told her that I don't want to go. And because this is how people think that go around sightseeing, see this, see that, will be happy. So, you know, and sometimes it's good you restrain yourself. So, because this is how, like, it's just what Ajahn Chah said to his monk. He said, most of us don't do terrible things, isn't it? You don't. But this underlying tendency. And this is not immoral by itself. It's not. So it depends on whether we want to keep wandering in the samsara or not. You know? So if we really want to get out of this cycle of rebirth, that we need to restrain ourselves, not to allow this asava, this underlying tendency that really keep us in samsara. That's why we need to give consideration, reflections, and look at it, you know, to keep a check, you know, and also keep us in place, not to follow that. So, is it answer your question? Yeah. That's why you need to practice. That's why you need to restrain first. You need to weaken it. That's why, because the five hindrances actually is the conditions that clouded the mind. That's why we have this distorted view. How we view things, we distort it. We perceive a dukkha as happiness, you know. And that's why we have to abandon that. But before that, we need to weaken, you know, because it will not totally uproot if it's too strong. It's just like we're keeping precept, be strength. When we restrain that, you know, that is help to weaken it. It's just like you have seen how people cut the big tree. They can't just cut like that. You can't. Isn't it? You have to stop to cut all the branches before you uproot the whole thing. And then the branches, then you come to the tree trunks, and slowly then only you left only that part only they pull out. You can't just pull the whole tree out. It's the same thing. Like that is by restraining, actually is you have to weaken that. We have to restrain ourselves before we can uproot the whole thing. And be able to abandon, to be able to overcome that five entrances. That's why you have to be in deep jhana. That's why, you know, that is without the view, because then we can see things clearly. But it's a long way to go there, isn't it? So that's why all these practices is just keep doing. That's why we don't thinking too far ahead that what attainment, you know. So we don't. But we just keep doing, because the Buddha's emphasize again and again and again is a gradual training. It takes time, little by little. So you can't just distract the whole thing, isn't it? That's why we have all these practices. Actually, all these practices is not to strengthen our pains, our defilements. So because when we react to that, actually we strengthen that, and then it becomes more intense, isn't it? That's why you slowly, then until that you without these five hindrances, then the mind is really clear, bright. Then you can see things as they really are. You can see things. You can really see this tree characteristic. You understand the Four Noble Truths. But it's not the superficial type, you know. We thought that we know. Actually, that is not the one, you know. And you need, but we can't just use willpower to just get there. So it takes time, you know, keep practicing, restraining our mind. That's why we keep precepts, you know, to restrain ourselves, to weaken the five hindrances. Then we can only ease to overcome that, you know, slowly, you know. And it's a graduate training, it's 6 times.
And I think it would also be around your own personal boundaries or lines of what you think is greed and what you think is needed.
That's why again and again it's come back to the wisdom as well. That's why the whole path of practice is Noble Four Path. You begin with, that's right, with right view and right intention, and the end of the path is also is wisdom. So we got to have a bit of wisdom to start off with, you know, to see that that is what is really beneficial, what is not beneficial. And that's like to where to draw the line actually is have to come from our practice. And actually no one help us. We have to help ourselves to develop our own wisdom and see where to draw the line and where we should restrain ourselves and keep investigating. You see, do I want to continue like that? Do I want to just, you know, keep going, or I want to go further? And not to worry so much. This is it's just cause and effect, you know, things, you know, you just put in the causes, you keep practicing, and we have to start with where we at, you know. And we cannot say that I just want to straight away, you know, oh, I want to become Sotapanna. You cannot, you know. We have to start with where we at, and then it's, you know, it's just for example, if from here from Gijikena to Perth it takes about 45 minutes or 50 minutes, and we cannot say I want it faster, I want half an hour. You can't, isn't it? You know, it just takes that long time because it has so much, you know, to because this is being accumulated for so long. And it takes time to wear out that energy. It takes time. So that's why the Buddha said it's a gradual training. So, but actually it's good sometimes we read this to remind us sometimes that we check ourselves out, you know, keep check and restrain ourselves and ask ourselves whether do I really need this, you know, how much I need in order to be happy, you know. So, okay, then, because of this, the sense of self, you know, and then that when he attains unwisely in this way, one of the six views arises. This one of the six views, how we view ourselves, you know, personality views, how we view ourselves. Abhijja asava, this is the taints arises, you see, one leading to another, you see. And the view self exists for me arise in him as true and established, as I just now mentioned to you, how we take this to be me and mine, that is, the self exists for me arise in him as true and established, or the view no self exists for me, arise in him and establish. Here, no self doesn't mean that is what the Buddha talking about, the non-self, is annihilation. There is no self, there is annihilation. Like, there is craving to be and craving not to be. Craving not to be is annihilation. There's no rebirth, no self. That's it, you know? There's only one birth. That is not the non-self, the Buddha mentioned. So this is no self exists for me, arise in him as true and established, that is annihilation. Or the view I perceive self, the self arises in him as true and established, that is, you perceive that that is the self, that is the observer, the self, observing all these emotion phenomena that as a self. Like a coin with two sides. Like that is a self, that is the observer, that is the observe with the observer. And the observer with what we observe, that is also self. And then he said, I perceive not self with self. That means that is everything is just consciousness. So it's all energy. There is no self. But even that also a self. Like nowadays with this psychology, you know, the modern psychology, they talk about, you know, all this impermanence, you know, and perceptions. And then they say all this is energy. There is no self. But the energy is also self, you know. So that is not the Buddha's teaching of non-self. It's not that no one there. It's just that this thing is not like... This thing is not like unchanged, you know. It's not there forever, the same me there, you know. That is because it keeps changing, you know. So that is this is not what the Buddha's teaching of non-self, but a lot of being, this not self that is the annihilation. And then this one, when they said that, you know, this consciousness is not self, you know, but so whatever that the I persist self with not self, yes, then all this is non-self, it's all energy, but and this is also a self. So arises immediately as true and established, or else he has some such views as this. Is this self of mind that speak and feel and experience here and there the results of good and bad actions, but this self of mind is permanent, everlasting, eternal, no subject to change, and it will endure as long as eternity. So all this how we have this speculative views that that is self, this is self eternal, that is no change, that is me, you know. Even if you read this embracing next of all views that this Brahmajara Suttas, that is the Buddha's talk about many types of views. Even the Buddha's mentioned, I remember it was really struck me when I read that many, many years ago. It's more than 15 years ago I read that. And even some monks, he be able to recollect their past life, because he can recollect many, many past lives. And his belief that that is self, because you see, I have self, you know, and that belief that is the eternal self. Even some people with, that is a wrong view, distorted view. So this, the actually there are the four distorted views the Buddha's mentioned. That is the view that we perceive pain as happiness, pleasure. So that is a distorted view. And something that is unattractive as something that is attractive. Something that is not permanent, we perceive that as a permanent. It's fixed, it's permanent, it's always eternal. And then things that is non-self, there's no self there, as a self. So this is the four distorted views. And this is the ignorant taint that is asava. There is avijja asava. So this speculative views, pickles, is called the takers of views, the wilderness of views, the conductions of views, the vacillation of views, the factors of views, fettered by the factors of views. The untaught ordinary person is not free from birth, aging, death, from sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. He's not free from suffering, I said. Pickles, a well-taught noble disciple who has regards for noble ones and is skilled and disciplined in the Dharma, who has regard for true men and is skilled and disciplined in the Dharma, understand that things are fit for attention and things are unfit for attention. Since that is so, he does not attend to those things unfit for attention, and he attends to those things fit for attention. What are things unfit for attention that he does not attend to? There are things such that when he attend to them, the unarisen taints of sensual desires arise in him. Then he repeat again that the paragraph 6, that is go back to the this is repeat as paragraph 6, you know, in him, and the unarisen taints of sensual desire increase, the unarisen taints of being arises in him, and the arisen taints of being increased. The unarisen taints of ignorance arises in him, and the arisen of taints of ignorance increases. So he repeat that again. And the taints arisen taints of ignorance increase. These are the things unfit for attention and that he does not attend to. And what are the things fit for attention that he attends to? There are things such that when he attends to them, the unarisen taints of sensual desires does not arise in him, and the arisen, and he repeat as the six again, and the arisen taints of ignorance is abandoned. These are the things fit for attention that he attends to. By not attending to things unfit for attention, but attention attending to things fit for attention, and the recent things do not arise in him, and arisen things are abandoned. So this is just like I have mentioned, if we don't get caught and to reinforce that, and that is slow, then it will be abandoned. So this will not come up, you know, like for example we got the senses. So I think further they did mention about things to be abandoned by restraining, by avoiding, by using. So I will go through that. So these are things fit for attention that he attends to by not attending to things unfit for attention, and by attending to things that fit for attention, unarisen things do not arise in him, and risen things are abandoned. So he attends wisely. This is suffering. So that's like we can, you know, and he attends wisely. This is origin of suffering. He attends wisely. This is the cessation of suffering. He attends wisely. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. When he attends wisely in this way, three factors are abandoned in him: personality views, doubt, adherence to rules and observance. These are called the things that should be abandoned by seeing. That is, you are seeing the Dhamma. That is the stream winner. You see the Four Noble Truths. That is, then the three lower factors, that doubt, adherence to rules and observance, and personality views, and that's abandoned. So that is referred to the Sotapanna, the stream winners, that you see the Dhamma. So now he goes to things to be abandoned by restraining. What things, bhikkhus, should be abandoned by restraining? Here, a bhikkhu, reflecting wisely, abides with eyes, faculties restrained. What things, vexations, fever might arise in ones who abides with eyes, faculties unrestrained? There are no things, vexations or fever in one who abides with the eyes faculties restrained. Reflecting wisely, he abides with the ear faculties restrained, with nose faculties restrained, with tongue and all the five senses, with the body faculties restrained, with the mind faculties restrained, while pains, vexation and fever might arise in one who abides with faculties unrestrained. There are no tense sensations or fever in one who abides with faculties restrained. So these are called tense that should be abandoned by restraining. So we restrain our senses, like just now we have already discussed with that, like that we want to see things, we want to go for that. This is how we restrain ourselves, like, you know, is we don't have to go there. Then we don't. That is how we don't go further. We restrain by the restrain our five senses and restrain our mind when the thoughts comes up. You know, with this sensual pressure arises. So that is the things to be abandoned by using. He said, "What things, bhikkhu, should be abandoned by using?" Here, a bhikkhu reflecting wisely uses the ropes only for protection. From cold, for protection, for heat, for protection from contact with gadflies, mosquitoes, wind, sun, creeping things, and only for purpose of concealing the private parts. Reflecting wisely, we use arms, foot, neither for amusement, nor for intoxication, nor for the sake of physical beauty, attractiveness, but only for the endurance and continuance of this body, for ending discomfort, and for assisting the holy life. Considering thus, I shall terminate old feelings without arousing new feelings, and I shall be healthy and blameless, and shall live in comfort. Reflecting wisely, he used the resting place only for protection from cold, for protection from heat, for protection from contact with gadflies, mosquitoes, wind, sun, creeping things, and only for purpose of warding off perils of climates, and for enjoying retreat. Reflecting wisely, he uses medicinal requisites only for protection from arisen afflicting feelings, and not for the benefit of good health. while things vexation and fever might arises in one who does not use requisite tests, there are no things vexations or fever in one who uses them tests. This is called things that should be abandoned by using. This is how, like, we use it. Like, for example, like nowadays, like a lot of people attached to, like, healthy is not enough. They want healthier, isn't it? Then they stuff themselves with lots of health food, you know, the supplement, you know, this is very expensive, organic, this and that. And I find these people become more unhealthy because it's very stressed, isn't it? Because you're so worried about your health, you know, so much that actually becomes more unhealthy. So yes, we need to look after when we are sick, we see doctors, you know, but sometimes people tend to worry so much and holding, clinging on to that, you know. This is how, that's why we have to, when we use this thing also, we reflect, you know, give consideration, you know. That's why each time, you know, whatever we use, that's why in the monastic training, we always, that's why we have this monastic reflection, that each time, actually, I encourage the nuns to reflect that even every day, because we used to do this chanting every fortnight. That is, I'm no longer living according to worldly aims and values. Sometimes we need to keep reflecting ourselves. Why we are here for? If we come to the monastery, we voluntarily to isolate ourselves, and we are still not. If we are still crave and still like to go out, accompany, you know, go out with others, you know, like to, you know, then what's the point of coming in? So that's why this is how we keep reminding ourselves, reflection. The Buddha asks, you know, for one who has come forth, you have to keep reflecting and reminding ourselves why we are here, why you put on robes. So, and I'm no longer, and my very life is sustained through the gifts of others. And the Buddha said, this should be reflected again and again by one who has gone forth. So, and then we eat, we reflect that the food is just medicine. So just feel, you know, we are not here, you know, we are eat to live. We are not here to live to eat. But a lot of people live to eat, isn't it? Spend so much time to eat this and that, you know. And put in so much effort, what is tasty, what is nice, and, you know, and there's, some people can spend the whole time, you know, get all this food that delicious, this is the best food, you know, so much time and energy, isn't it? So we are not here to, we are not eat to live, we are eat to live, but not live to eat, so... That's why it's good that when we use it, you know, when we're using this and whatever the requisite we use, the food, the resting place, the lodging, the dress, you know, the clothes that we wear, it's good enough, you know, no need to have branded one, no need to have expensive one, it's enough to keep us warm. So that's why we do not need a lot, actually, isn't it? And a dwelling place that, you know, how much we need? Even you've got a big house, we only need 4 by 6, you know? And you got many, a big house also, you cannot sleep from one place to another, isn't it? And it makes us really tired and stressed. So you need 4 by 6. This is important, we remind ourselves, that's why this is how this the Buddha said, this wise attention, you know, that is, we reflect, you know, give consideration, ask ourselves, when we want something, when we want to get something, we ask ourselves, do we really need it? That's why this is the reason, that's why in the monastery, we do have the rules, like it's also it's also in the bhikkhuni's rules, like as a nun, we are not allowed to ask, unless we've been offered, but we can't even hint that, you know, try to hint at what we want, you know. And we sometimes it's just amazing, we can live without lots of things, you know, when we don't have it. We just make do. And sometimes I always feel happy, you know, especially when you go overseas to teach, you have many people that want to offer you things, you know. I'm so glad, I'm happy that each time I said no, I do not need anything. So we do not need so much, you know, in order to be happy. Actually, it's a burden to have lots of things, isn't it? It's not, don't bring you much happiness. Actually, it's a burden. It's that the more you have, the more you have to look after, isn't it? You have to worry about it, and you don't have any, you don't even worry about whether the robbers come in to rob you. You have nothing to give. You know, it's okay. You help yourself, see whatever you can take, please take it. You know, if you don't have valuable things, you don't even worry about that, isn't it? So, taste to be abandoned by endurance. So what taste? Bhikkhus should be abandoned by endurance. Here a bhikkhu, reflecting wisely. There's cold, heat, hunger, and thirst, and contact with gadflies, mosquitoes, wind, sun, and creeping things, endures ill-spoken, unwelcome words, and arisen bodily feelings that are painful, racking, sharp, piercing, disagreeable, distressing, and menacing to life, while pains, vexations, and fever might arise in one who does not endure such things. There are no taints, vexation, or fever in one who endures them. They call the taints that should be abandoned by enduring. That's right, like this is how, that just now we talk about the how when you're outside there, like someone saying things like that. So sometimes we just endure. Practice endurance. So, okay, just endure. So, okay, if some people just said terrible things to us, we just endure that. But if, because when we got upset, when we react to that, and then we got into the argument, you know, quarrel or fight, then we strengthen the tense that already arisen. And arisen one arise, and those already arisen become stronger. So that's why sometimes we got to endure. If people call us stupid or anything, you know, so we just endure. So keep telling, just keep like Ajahn Chah used to ask yourself, if someone call you dog and you see whether you got the tail. So sometimes we just have to remind ourselves, you know, to endure that. It's okay. What are the nasty thing people said to us? So keep cool. Actually, I find that it's quite useful that for myself, that sometimes I do use, like sometimes you can pacify your mind. Not like, for example, like if someone says something and then you keep telling yourself, you know, keep cool, something that is really works for you, certain words, you know, some people used to say chill out, you know, you keep saying that, you know, then so then you become like you focus on that like a mantra, then you won't, that actually that to stop your mind is going further and listening to what that person said, and then you just keep to yourself like a mantra, you know. So, like, cool, or calm down, you know. Then you just keep that. So, let the person say, and then you just, then you don't react. I know sometimes it's not easy. So, taste to be abandoned by avoiding. You see, what taste because it should be abandoned by avoiding? Here are people reflecting wisely, a wild elephants, a wild horse, a wild bull, a wild dogs, a snake, stump, a bramble, patch, chasm, cliff, chest pit, a sewer, reflecting wisely, he avoids sitting on unsuitable seat, wandering to unsuitable resorts, and associating with bad friends, seeing he were to do so wise companions in the holy life might suspect him of evil conduct. So what things, vexations, and fever might arise in one who does not avoid these things. There are no taints, vexation, and fever in one to avoid them. These are called the taints that should be abandoned by avoiding. Like just like we know that we associate with those friends that, you know, that is not a good friends, you know, then we avoid. So we know that if you associate with these, you know, people long enough, sometimes we think that we not be affected. Doesn't mean that we are not be kind to them. We are kind to them, you know, when we see them, you know. If they need help, we can help them, but not to associate with them. So because we know that it's not really good for us, isn't it? Like some of the things we know that we go down to the track, what is going to happen? Sometimes we know, then we should avoid, isn't it? if we know that this thing, you know, when we get caught and then we know that when we go down to the track and what is, then we're going to suffer. Then we avoid that. We don't go into that, isn't it? So that's why we this is the taste to be abandoned by avoiding. So taste to be abandoned by removing. What taste because it should be abandoned by removing? Here, a bhikkhu reflecting wisely does not tolerate an arisen thoughts of sensual desires. He abandons it, remove it, does away with it, annihilates with it, annihilates it. He does not tolerate an arisen thoughts of ill will. He does not tolerate an arisen thoughts of cruelty. He does not tolerate arisen evil, unwholesome state. He abandons them, removes them, does away with them, and annihilates them. What pains, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not remove these thoughts? These are no pains, vexation, or fever in one who remove them. These are called the things that should be abandoned by removing. So that is how where you have to practice that right effort, you know, to not to allow these unwholesome thoughts, you know, to persist and try to remove it, you know, find ways how to, you know, not to allow this to come in to remove it. So what taints because should be abandoned by developing? Here a bhikkhu reflecting wisely develops the mindfulness, enlightenment factors, which is supported by seclusion, dispassions and cessations, and ripens in relinquishments. He develops in the investigation of state enlightenment factors, in energy enlightenment factors, rapture enlightenment factors, tranquility enlightenment factors, concentration enlightenment factors, equanimity enlightenment factors, which is supported by seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. What tense, vexation, and fever might arise in one who does not develop these enlightenment factors. These no taints, vexation, or fever in one who develops them. These are called the taints who, these are called the taints that should be abandoned by developing. So you develop these seven factors of enlightenment. When you have these seven factors of enlightenment, so then that the taints will not arise. That will abandon these taints. So conclusion, bhikkhus. When for a bhikkhus, taints that should be abandoned by seeing have been abandoned by seeing. When the taints should be abandoned by restraining, have been abandoned by restraining. When the taints that should be abandoned by using, have been abandoned by using. When the taints that should be abandoned by enduring, have been abandoned by enduring. When the things that should be abandoned by avoiding have been abandoned by avoiding. When things that should be abandoned by removing have been abandoned by removing. When the things that should be abandoned by developing have been abandoned by developing. Then he is called bhikkhu who dwells restrained with the restraint of all the things. He has severed craving, flung off factors, and with the complete penetrations of conceit, he has made an end of suffering. This is what the Blessed One said, the bhikkhus who satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So any more questions or comments? There is the seven factors, that is a mindfulness, the four foundations of mindfulness, and there is a the first one is four foundations of mindfulness, and then there is the rapture, piti, sukha, and what it says, the happiness, and the tranquility, and then the stillness, the happiness, stillness, and then the equanimity. That's the seven. That's the seven factors of enlightenment. So, yeah. So this asava is this underlying tendency that, you know, that's when we have this contact, when we are not careful, when we are heedless, so we get caught. Then this is how craving arises and then clinging, and then we develop these views, these personality views that is the ignorance, then that's why it's the existing to be. And this is how we keep, you know, we carry this, you know, into the stream of consciousness, into the next life, and keep go on and on, and then we keep, you know, reacting to that, we keep reinforce that tendency again and again and again. That's why, so we keep, you know, in that circle again and again. So yeah, so that's a mess.
We can't practice endurance and forgiveness without being practically provoked.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm looking at this from a different angle,
mm-hmm.
as an opportunity to practice to become a better person.
Mm-hmm.
I see there's a chance for me to practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this is a gradual training. You know, it will not happen overnight. So that's why sometimes a lot of people do not take delights or do not appreciate how far they come to, you know. They always say that I have no progress. But actually they did, you know, they do really well, you know. Like compared to, you look back, you know, sometimes you see, you know, like in the past, you used to be very up and down already, reacting to, you know, in the same situation. But now you become really cool, you know. And of course it's little by little. So we cannot use our willpower to say, to get rid of this. If we can do that, all of us got enlightened already. So yeah, we all. That's why the Buddha said, if you know the teaching that you know what the Buddha is teaching, you know, he will not teach if those listen to his teaching and apply it and follow instruction, you know, to apply it and. If they cannot get enlightened, so what's the point that he's going to teach? You know, it's no point. You know, it teaches you, you're not going to get enlightened anyway. So it's just wasting his time and energy. But it's because it's possible, but it's difficult. But because we've been conditioned, we are all results oriented. You know, we always want to look at the results. And actually, it's a, you know, we have to put in the courses. You know. Keep practicing, and is, you know, and actually we keep looking at what we haven't achieved yet, and we don't look at what we already so far have achieved to really appreciate oneself, because it's important to be able to have the appreciations, appreciate oneself, and to have this self-respect, because when you have that, then you have this self-confidence. You have confidence that you have the faith that, yeah, me too, I can get enlightened. It's possible. It's not that it's impossible. So any more questions or comments?